This is our concluding class for this visit. Maybe some future visit will pick up where we left off. There's some persons here who haven't been with us from the beginning, so just a little review. We've been discussing this topic, Krishna's killing of demons in Vrindavan, and the childhood pastimes of Krishna are very famous, very much loved, adored by Krishna's devotees, worshipped, heard and chanted, remembered, and there's very special features of these pastimes. You've seen this slide, at least a version of it. This is for review. This is quoting from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Krishna's activities are of two types, nitya and naimittika, or eternal and occasional. Occasional having to do with the specific features that are in his worldly pastimes that are not found in Goloka. And there's a purpose beneficial for us within these pastimes. Here's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of eternal pastimes. And such sincere devotees hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas or unwanted material contaminations will be destroyed. By the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas or unwanted material contaminations will be destroyed. So we're focusing on the pastimes and we're focusing on the purpose of the occasional features of his pastimes. And like, for example, we're going to be discussing Krishna's going into the forest with the cowherd boys at the age of 4, 4 and a half to herd the calves. And that's the nitya portion. And then we'll come to the agasura shows up, nimitta portion. So there's a blend of these two. And there's a purpose behind the occasional aspect. So by remembering these pastimes, devotees aspire to destroy their own demoniac mentalities and tendencies. Here's a list. It goes on for 2 pages, but we'll just cover it so far. Putana. Subal was asking, can you review? So here's the review. The pseudo-guru, which may be either a person or one's own conditioned mind, like the internal guru, he calls, where they, by speculation, blah, blah. Chakatasura, the cart demon, the tendency to carry the cartload of bad habits accumulated in this life and previous lives. He, Chakatasura, also represents lethargy and dullness. Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon, false pride arising from material scholarship which gives rise to bogus philosophies. Now the Kuvera and Manigriva. Arrogant pride from puffed up aristocracy rooted in madness for wealth. Vatsasura. A childish type of mentality which gives rise to a type of greediness which results in a wicked type of mischievousness. And last night we discussed Vakasura, the duck demon or the stork demon or the crane, actually it's a crane, cunning duplicity, deceptiveness, and false types of behavior. And today we're going to be discussing Aghasura, cruelty, violence, and causing trouble to others out of envy. So the list is 21. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's list, taken directly from his writing. And now it's Aghasura. And it begins, this chapter begins with a description, Srimad Bhagavatam. One day, Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic, Vanashaya, in the forest. Rising early in the morning, he told the cowherd boys the night before, let's have a picnic. Have your mother's make the arrangement. No breakfast at home. Take it with us. We'll have a picnic out in the forest. And then to remind them, because they might not get up in time, he blew his bugle made of a buffalo horn. And all the cowherd boys and calves, they weren't sleeping anyways. They were really eagerly anticipating being with Krishna for the day. And in the commentary it says, Mother Rohini forcefully kept Balaram at home because it was his birthday. And it's important in the Leela that he wasn't there, because you'll see why. So, Krishna, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys, keeping their respective groups of hundreds and thousands of calves before them, proceeded from Vrajabhumi to the forest. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur goes into this elaborate explanation of the word asankhyata. Asankhyata means, sankhya means to count, and asankhyata means too many to count. Then he goes into it and says, you know, a certain number, certain name means a certain number, like 10 million, or one with seven zeros. And then 10 million times 10 million times 10 million times 10 million equals one asankhyata. Too many to count. That's how many. And the calves were arranged in such a way that there was, each boy was assigned to a group. And so together they went to the forest, each boy looking after their group. And it wasn't just them and the cows. The commentary explains, they're holding sticks, horns, flutes, and lunch bags. Of course, their breakfast too. And were ornamented by their mothers with necklaces of crystal, pearls, and gold, and gunja seed berries before entering the forest. And then once they were in the forest, they ornamented themselves with forest fruits and flowers and soft minerals. They were decked out. And then our acharyas asked the question, how is this possible? All these calves and cowherd boys in a 32 square mile region. And then the answer is given, no problem. No problem. There's no question of impediments, obstacles, or limitations, because the Lord, His associates, and His holy Dham have inconceivable power or chinsha shakti. This is a little portion of what's discussed in Sri Brahma Samhita in describing Gokula, the highest, topmost region of the spiritual world, that has its counterpart in this world, Gokula and Goloka. Gokula indicating Vraja in this realm, Goloka indicating Krishna's position in the transcendental realm. And to illustrate this, now this is Jiva Goswami in his commentary on verse 5 of Sri Brahma Samhita. He says, one has to, in order to understand Krishna, even to get a clue, a beginning understanding of Krishna, to understand God, one has to accept that he has inconceivable potencies. Otherwise, there's no question of his being God or our understanding his godliness. He has inconceivable potencies. Otherwise, he's one of us. Or like a better version maybe of one of us. But that's not God. He's in his own category. He has an inconceivable potency. And then he lists multiple examples, like 6 examples. One of them includes Lord Brahma. When Lord Brahma comes, he's called by Krishna, please come see me in Dwarka. So Brahma's very happy to get an invitation to go see Krishna in Dwarka. And when he reaches Dwarka, he's checked by the attendant of Krishna, who says, please wait, I'll find out if the Lord can see you. Please give me your name. My name is Lord Brahma. Very well. The attendant comes back, and the attendant says to Brahma, the Lord would like to know which Brahma. And his reply is, what do you mean, which Brahma? There's more than one Brahma. I'm Lord Brahma, the four-headed Chaturmukha Brahma, the father of the Kumaras and the creator of the universe. Please tell the Lord that. So the attendant comes back and says, okay, he's invited you to come. Please come with me. So he goes before the Supreme Lord, and he sees assembling at the same time hundreds and thousands of Lord Brahmas. And he can see all of them, but they cannot see him. Some not only have 4 heads, but 10 heads, and 100 heads, and 1,000 heads, and 10,000 heads, and all paying their obeisances at the feet of Krishna. Brahma gets it. Wow. I'm tiny, and he's great. Or another example he points to is Narada Muni visiting Dwarka. And when he goes to visit Dwarka to see Krishna, he goes to the various palaces. And in the various palaces, much to his amazement, not only Krishna is there in each and every of the palaces simultaneously, but he's doing different things simultaneously at different times of the day simultaneously. Krishna moves time and space according to his desire for pleasure. One place he goes and it's morning. Krishna is just getting up. One time he goes and it's evening. And Krishna is hearing glorification of his wonderful activities. Sometimes in another place at the same time he's having lunch. At the same time. Simultaneously at different times and different manifestations of Krishna at the same time. And there's a slew of other examples he gives. Another one is the size of Dwarka. So it's Dwarka. Vraja is 32 square miles. Dwarka is 64 square miles. But within that 64 square miles, there's thousands of palaces. Each one, 16,000 plus all the other people besides Krishna and his palaces, thousands of palaces, and each one of them is several miles across. Do the math, it doesn't fit. It must be fiction, right? It's the inconceivable potency which Krishna can elastically expand, although to mundane measurement at this dimension. It is to be understood that which is Krishna and Krishna's has inconceivable potency, so there's no difficulty for Krishna to accommodate whatever he wants to accommodate, and he does. Even a small portion of the Holy Dhamma is sufficient to accommodate billions of universes, each measuring 50 million miles in diameter. Krishna showed this to Brahma in the later chapter, so that's why I already described that. Inconceivable potency. But he's playing just like a small child. Because that's his desire, and it's also the desire of his dear devotees. So, along with the cowherd boys and their own groups of calves, Krishna came out with an unlimited number of calves. And then they went into the forest and started, well, herding the cows. You'll see, their business is simply sporting, and the cows just followed along. Krishna and his older brother Balaram wandered in the beautiful forest along with their cowherd boyfriends and their cows. They decorated themselves with leaves, peacock feathers, and garlands of flowers. All the cowherd boys used to steal one another's lunch bags. When a boy came to understand that his bag had been taken away, the other boys would throw it farther away to a more distant place, and those standing there would throw it still further. When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh, the proprietor would cry, and the bag would be returned. Sometimes one boy would steal another's food container, lunch bag, take it to a distant place, hide it under a tree surrounded by thorn bushes and red ants. Sometimes Krishna would go to a somewhat distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Then all the other boys would run to accompany him, each one shouting, "I shall be the first to run and touch Krishna. I shall touch Krishna first." And another would say, "No, no, I will touch Krishna. I will touch Krishna first." In this way, they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna. And we do deity worship, and the cowherd boys run and play and touch Krishna that way because of their intimacy of love. All the boys would be differently engaged. Some boys blew their flutes. Others blew bugles, made a horn. Some chased the shadows of birds and pulled the tails of baby monkeys. They would climb the trees by grabbing the tails of the monkeys hanging from the branches. After imitating the funny faces of the monkeys, the boys would jump from tree branch to branch. They leaped after the frogs into the pools of water. Upon seeing their reflections on the water, they would laugh heartily. Sometimes they would wrestle. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram would play their flutes and the boys would dance, decorated, as you see, with garlands of leaves and flowers and playing buffalo horns and dancing and raising their arms. The boys would shout loudly in a playful mood. Then they would curse their echoes, saying, "Who is that speaking?" Hearing a single syllable echo back, the boys would become angry. "What is this?" The echo would reply, vibrating, whatever that sound is. And the boys would say, "Today you will die." In this way, they would curse again and again and never come to an end. Sometimes Krishna would sit under a tree and play his flute. And when Krishna played his flute, everything stopped. The cows would stop and their ears would go up in the air and their tails would stand up in the air, and the cowherd boys would become stunned and motionless just hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. At other times they take pleasure pretending to be monkeys, climbing trees, or imitating frogs by diving in the water. Some imitated the buzzing of bumblebees, and others imitated the voice of the cuckoo. Some boys imitated flying birds by running after the bird's shadow on the ground, and some imitated the beautiful movements and attractive postures of the swans. Some sat down with the ducks, sitting silently, and others imitating the dancing of the peacocks. Here's the bird imitating, the frog imitating, the peacock imitating. Oh, there's the frogs and the birds and the peacocks. Some boys imitated the beautiful movements and attractive postures of the swans. Oh, we read this. In other words, they were having a blast. Just like little boys will sometimes do. Innocent, pure-hearted, just so happy to be with Krishna, enjoying the beauty of the forest and the fragrances and the colors and the minerals and the flowers and the beauty of nature, and they didn't have a care in the world. And the cows are just happy to be with Krishna and Balaram, the cowherd boys. In this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence, for Gyanis desiring to merge into that effulgence, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead for devotees who accepted eternal servitorship, and who for ordinary persons is but another ordinary child. The cowherd boys have accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives. They're able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? It's in this section that Shukadeva Goswami says what Prabhupada would often quote, Krita Punya Punja. Who can say how many unlimited numbers of pious activities, and this doesn't mean, you know, Boy Scout kind of pious activities, transcendental sukriti, that kind, to have that kind of association with Krishna and that loving regard for Krishna and Krishna's reciprocating. How fortunate. Then a great demon named Agasura appeared, whose death was being awaited even by the demigods. The demigods drank nectar every day, but still they feared this great demon and awaited his death. The demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed in the forest by the cowherd boys. Sent by Kamsa, he was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasa. So Bakasa was older, Putana was number two sister, and then the third brother. So he was angry. Krishna has killed my sister and brother, Putana and Bakasa. Therefore, in order to please them both, I shall kill this Krishna along with his assistants, the cowherd boys. So that's his meditation. I want to kill Krishna. So he made that decision, and he assumed a huge snake as thick as a big mountain and as long as 8 miles. as a long snake. Having assumed this wonderful python's body, he spread his mouth like a big cave in the mountains and lay down in the road, expecting to swallow Krishna and his associates, the cowherd boys. And you remember how many cowherd boys there are, but it's a big snake. His lower lip rested on the surface of the earth, and his upper lip was touching the clouds in the sky. The borders of his mouth resembled the sides of a big cave in a mountain, and the middle of his mouth was as dark as possible. His tongue resembled a broad traffic way. His breath was like a warm wind, and his eyes blazed like fire. He's got a big mouth. Look at those cows already wandering into the mouth of Agasura. Upon seeing the demon's wonderful form, which resembled a great python, the boys thought, it must be a beautiful scenic spot in Vrindavan. Thereafter, they imagined it to be similar to the mouth of a great python. In other words, the boys, unafraid, thought that it was a statue made in the shape of a great python for the enjoyment of their pastimes. They considered amongst themselves, we've been by this pathway many times. We've never seen this, whatever it is. What is it? Maybe it's a this, maybe it's a that. Maybe it is a snake. But anyway, Krishna will protect us, let's go. So off they went. Dear friends, is this creature dead? Or is it actually a living python with its mouth spread wide open just to swallow us? Kindly clear up this doubt. This is, by the way, the demigods watching. Thereafter they decided, dear friends, this is certainly an animal sitting here to swallow us all. Its upper lip resembles a cloud reddened by the sunshine. Its lower lip resembles the reddish shadows of a cloud. Let's go. On the left and right, two depressions resembling mountain caves are the corners of its mouth, and the high mountain peaks are teeth. In length and breadth, the animal's tongue resembles a broad traffic lane. Inside the mouth, very, very dark, like a cave in a mountain. His lower lip rested on the surface of the earth. Oh, we read this. Okay. The hot, fiery wind is the breath coming out of his mouth, which is giving off a bad smell, a burning flesh, because of all the dead bodies he has eaten. Then the boys said, has this living creature come to swallow us? If he does so, he will immediately be killed like Bakasura without delay. Thus, they looked at the beautiful face of Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura, and laughing loudly and clapping their hands, they entered the mouth of the python. And Krishna's looking up. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is situated as Antaryami, the Super Soul, in the core of everyone's heart, heard the boys talking among themselves about the artificial python. Unknown to them, it was actually Agasura, a demon who had appeared as a python. Krishna, knowing this, wanted to forbid his associates to enter the demon's mouth. And the explanation is, not only one may primarily think he was concerned for the safety of the cowherd boys. If they entered, they might be killed. But actually he was thinking, if they experience even one moment of separation from me, it's too unbearable for them. So I should do something. He wanted to stop them. Krishna saw that all the cowherd boys who did not know anyone but him as their Lord had now gone out of his hand and were helpless. Having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who is death personified, it was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends, the cowherd boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure what to do. Krishna became covered by his own yogamaya potency, by his will, of course, because everything acts according to his will. But he enjoyed that moment of being stunned and concerned and bewildered. In the meantime, while Krishna was considering how to stop them, all the cowherd boys entered the mouth of the demon. The demon, however, did not swallow them, for he was thinking of his own relatives and who had been killed by Krishna. But he didn't swallow them because he was waiting for Krishna to enter and be killed. Krishna considered, now what is to be done? How would both the killing of this demon and saving the devotees be performed simultaneously? Krishna decided to wait for an intelligent means by which he could simultaneously save the boys and kill the demon. Then he decided. He entered into the mouth of Agasura. And when Agasura understood Krishna had entered his mouth, the demigods who were watching all of this from the clouds were, Agasura. But the demons were very happy. Oh, very good. Krishna is being killed. Here's Krishna popping out through the head of the Agasura demon. When the invincible, supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna, heard the demigods crying, alas, alas, from behind the clouds, he immediately enlarged himself within the demon's throat just to save himself and the cowherd boys, his own associates, from the demon who wished to smash them. Then, because Krishna had increased the size of his body, the demon extended his body to a very large size. As Krishna got bigger, he got bigger. So Krishna got bigger. So he got bigger. So Krishna got bigger. And he got bigger. Guess who won? Nonetheless, his breathing stopped. He suffocated, and his eyes rolled here and there and popped out. The demon's life air, however, could not pass through any outlet. And therefore, finally, it burst out through a hole in the top of the demon's head. When all the demons, life air, had passed away through that hole in the top of his head, Krishna glanced over the dead calves and cowherd boys and brought them back to life. Then Mukunda, who can give one liberation, came out from the demon's mouth with his friends and the calves. From the body of the gigantic python, a glaring effulgence came out, illuminating all directions, and stayed individually in the sky until Krishna came out of the corpse's mouth. Then, as all the demigods looked on, this effulgence entered into Krishna's body. Sayuja Mukti. And the cowherd boys celebrated. Yay! Nice! Well done! Well done! Let's go have lunch. Thereafter, everyone being pleased, the demigods began to shower flowers from Nandana, Karana, the celestial dancing girls began to dance, and the Gandharvas, who are famous for singing, offered their prayer. Drummers began to beat their kettle drums, and the Brahmanas offered Vedic hymns. In this way, both in the heavens and on earth, everyone began to perform his own duties, glorifying the Lord. Please appreciate that each person having their respective nature and service to Krishna, they're performing them accordingly. But consider the cowherd boys, the innocence and the simplicity and the purity of their love for Krishna. That was their service. And which do you think Krishna is more attracted to? Oh, Parikshit, when the python-shaped body of a gosser dried up into merely a big skin, it became a wonderful place for the inhabitants of Vrindavan to visit. And it remained so for a long, long time, an 8-mile long body of a python. So that's the end of Agasura. Now here's a description from Garga Samhita about his previous life. In his previous life, he was Shankarchuda's son. Who knows Shankarchuda? The Leela was Shankarchuda. Shankarchuda. Huh? Yeah, briefly. No, she's not going to do it. You want to describe it? No. Keep it simple. Shankarchuda was a conch and a demon and lived within the ocean. And Krishna destroyed him. So his son was also named Agha. What does Agha mean? Sin. He was young, strong, and very handsome. He was like another Kamadev. And when he saw the disfigured sage Ashtavakra Muni has his name because he was bent in 8 places. And when he saw him walking by, he laughed. Who is this ugly person? That was it. The sage then cursed Agha, a wicked-hearted one. You will become a snake. You will be the ugliest snake in the circle of the world. The demon was very afraid. His pride and his arrogant position slipped away, and he fell at the sage's feet asking, please, 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 relieve me of this difficulty. Make something that'll relieve me of this curse. So Ashtavakra then said, Sri Krishna, who is more handsome than many millions of Kamadevas, will enter your stomach. Then you'll be freed from having a snake's form. By Ashtavakra's curse, Agastya became a snake, and by Ashtavakra's blessing, Agastya attained a liberation even the demigods cannot attain. So that's Agastya's previous life. So now, conclusion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describe Agastya represents cruelty, violence, and causing trouble to others out of envy. That's an appropriate illustration. Out of curiosity, because I heard some description about the cruelty of Stalin, so I read a little biography of Stalin's life. And that person, so cruel, heartless and cruel. So Agastya represents that, the mentality of cruelty to others. And it includes, our Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has a description of this, the attitude of offense against the chanting of the holy names, where one can commit sinful activity and continue chanting and think everything is all right. Like I, in the course of travel, I met someone that was born in a Brahmin family, some part of India, and they asked, is it okay to, here in the Western countries, people do these things all the time, to take wine or alcohol in moderation, not get drunk or anything like that, but, you know, moderation, social. Such contemplation just doesn't enter into the mind of someone unless they're affected by or influenced by that association, particularly in this age of Kali. And the hesitation is another form of this, according to our acharyas, is having the asset of, just like Prabhupada describing what real violence is, when you have the means of assisting others and you don't do so, that's violence. So those who have this treasure of Krishna consciousness and don't extend it, or unwilling, reluctant to extend it to others, that's another form of violence, or an essential form of violence, but that which leads to other forms of violence. So that's the end. This Agastya demon represents this mentality, and of course Krishna liberated him from that mentality and situated him in the transcendental state just by his contact. And similarly, by hearing these pastimes of Krishna, which are none different than Krishna, we're put in contact, and we can pray that such impurity, such whatever that tendency that may be there within us, is mitigated by the mercy of Krishna. It is said specifically that one cannot enter Braja or Vrindavan with any of these contaminations. You can't enter a place that's pure unless you're pure. So from our position, hearing of these pastimes, remembering the pastimes, contemplating the pastimes, praying to Krishna for the specific purpose for which he performed this pastime and the others to become freed from such tendencies. It's not a mechanical process. Bhakti is a devotional process. So it requires some willingness, some conscious striving and wishing and praying and connecting with Krishna in a devotional way. The power is there. Krishna is ready. From our side, the eagerness and the willingness must be there. And the misgivings, the shortcomings, the impurities can be taken away. For Krishna, no difficulty. So any discussion? Yes. The one option is out of envy, willfully does something harmful and hurtful to others. What was the other one?
That's fear, and at the same time is some willingness to
help others. Oh, sure. As we've all experienced, these things are complex. And it's not always the same thing, even in one individual, with a speaker from one individual to another individual. When, in other words, what prompts envy is different in different persons. And when someone's envy button is prompted, then that wickedness can come out. But someone may not be envious of others in other areas or in all areas, and then that willingness to be of service and helpful and deliberately helpful instead of deliberately hurtful can be in the same person and even can change from time to time. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that Adhatra, Yodhra, and Sadhatra, all of them are family, siblings.
Yes.
And each of them represent different.
Yes.
Bad characteristics.
Is that a problem?
No. You shouldn't find that they all go hand in hand?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Just means they have the same mother.
This question is related to Krishna's previous question, but according to later answers. So then I noticed this awkward demonic mentalities inside. And I'm like getting scared. I get scared, like what if so much has been given to me and so much for Krishna consciousness, so much has been invested. And what if this I get carried away and I get stuck in materialism sometimes and it's really hard for me. And what
to do? Consider, you're walking along the path of life and you see this demoniac creature approaching you. or you're walking along the path of life and you see this demoniac tendency within you, what to do? Which is what your question is. Krishna! That's what to do. You carry on with your devotional service with a greater awareness, attentiveness, focus upon the need to be rescued from this condition by the mercy of Krishna. So the demonstration is not only calling out, but the demonstration is the enthusiasm and eagerness to carry on with service to Krishna without that impediment and contamination. Now, it doesn't go away just because you snap your fingers and Krishna takes it away. So it doesn't happen like that. We all know very well it doesn't happen like that. But when there's persistence, if you know, think of this very nice Damodar Leela, where there's two things required, and when those two things are required, obstacles can be overcome, or devotional service in its proper manner, proper execution, can manifest itself. So, diligent effort on our part and the exhibition of Krishna's Kripa Shakti, his mercy, the two are required. And so you just stay in that position, striving sincerely to do your service without that shortcoming or demoniac tendency, whatever it is, and Krishna's mercy. Because otherwise you can just scream and run. And that doesn't take care of the situation. The wild demoniac entity will chase you. Or that which is within the heart, whether it's outside or inside, the demoniac tendency within will follow with you when you go here or go there. So that's not a solution. Stand your ground. Continue with your service in a proper service mood and depend Krishna to relieve this tendency. Stay focused like that. Something else? Yes.
Unless you're thinking about that, the concept of Nirvikalpa, part of Krishna's pastime. It is a reflection of the eternal pastime of the things of negativity.
Don't get caught up in the language. It's a phrase to help us understand something. We went over this before. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm thinking about not just the thousand passions of Krishna, but then the later passions in Mahabharata, in which, say, for example, in Duryodhana, is not a devotee.
He's certainly not.
So, but it's, you know, it's part of Krishna's pastime. So there's many other examples like that. That is part of Krishna's pastime. So there's something that we have to learn from those pastimes also that can sort of reflect on our own anartha. I think we can see those.
Well, it's a little different because he's not a devotee. And so it's not just an anartha. He's got an attitude. Not just an anartha. Like, oh, he's got some shortcoming, and Krishna will help him become relieved of that shortcoming. He's got an attitude towards Krishna and towards Krishna's dear devotees, the Pandavas. So there's some overlap, but it's not much. the main essential element is different. In the case of a devotee, Krishna can relieve the devotee from some impure tinge or contamination. But the heart of a demon is inimical towards Krishna and Krishna's devotees. I mean, Agastya wanted to kill all the cowherd boys, but especially Krishna. That's not a contamination. It's demoniac. Duryodhana, he had his virtue. You know, in certain ways, he was expert in certain things. As people of this world may be also expert in his thing, but he was really expert in governance. That was Yudhisthira's, one of his hesitations. He's doing a good job. Let him rule a kingdom. We need a good king. He's doing a good job. He's good at it. Let him do it. But Krishna didn't see that. I mean, Krishna wasn't interested in just having a good ruler. He came to put virtuous persons in charge of the world and eliminate the demoniac persons. And Duryodhana was one of them. And he had his chances to, like, okay, I guess I'm a little envious, but I'll try to control it. He had no interest in that. That's different. The means of purification differs. In the back.
For me, like, there are mainly like two inspirations. One is just the awesome power of Krishna, the potency of Krishna, and no matter how big the anartha is or how scary looking it is, that for Krishna is just piece of cake. It takes no effort for him. And so for me, the inspiration is that same Krishna is available in the form of the holy name for us every day. So it inspires me to take shelter of the holy name in that manner and hope, and the hope is that if I take shelter, also like how the other Vajrayanis are doing, whenever they see some demon or they just call out to Krishna. So there's a great inspiration and hope. Because on the other hand, I don't think it's in this problem, but a couple times when I heard you say, you know how it goes, it's casual, or it's even a little discouraged. So I want to confirm that my inspiration is not just some lofty,
the gratitude, there's the potency of Krishna is unlimited, and at once, I'll say, two things, on the one hand, but on the other hand. One time a disciple left Krishna consciousness, and then he came back, and he was, beaten up by the material energy and really regretful that he had left, and he came to see Prabhupada and asked, send him to see me, bring him to see me. So he came, and the devotee was crying, I'm sorry I left you, Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, don't you know, with one kick of my boot, I can take away all of these difficulties. Just stay. It's not an exaggeration. Then on the other hand, Prabhupada said to one reporter, yes, on Krishna consciousness, all it takes is one moment, less than a moment. But people are attached. There's two things. You know that. I repeat it regularly. Sense gratification and mental speculation. Generally, people are attached to these things, and therefore, generally, it's a gradual process. So that's the, it's gradual. The potency is there. It's like Bhagavati Dari's question the other day about why does it, you know, take so long? You know, I see things, but I continue doing the same stupid things. Because our desire for shelter taking is weak. So Krishna doesn't force himself upon us. But if we are eager, then he's available. So the gradual has to do with our laziness or our affinity for matter. We don't want to let go of that. We want to bring our affinity for matter with us into the spiritual world, and it just doesn't belong here. So it's gradual. It kind of gets chipped away by pieces or gradually cleansed. Therefore, the gradual part, but it can happen at once. Kadvamdha Maharaj, somebody. So it's not, you know, sentiment or wishful thinking or something. Back to your question. The potency is there. And if our eagerness is there, that potency is invested within us. Okay. Give me a second. You have two? What was it? Take the microphone.
All these demons who are appearing in this Nandika pastime have their past lives, and they were cursed by
somebody.
Same person, and given the veneration of they will be saved by Krishna. And so this is also an arrangement of Krishna is to be part of the
leader. Yes, yes, you got it.
So they end up in merging into the effort.
Well, not all of them. Some went back to Godhead.
Only one, right? Putana.
No. Shankarachar also, it says at the end, at least in one of the renderings, I can't remember which of the references, I can't remember which one. A chariot with 1,000 wheels descended from the spiritual world, and he went to the spiritual world. That's a Sayuja. So, what's your question now? Step beside the detail, what's the broader question you're asking? Is there a bigger plan in all of this? Yes.
Krishna is constantly appearing in various universes, continuously
happening.
And so these arrangements, these are
all part of his leader. He's in the heart of the sages that do the cursing and then give the benediction. It's all Krishna's grand orchestration. While he's, you know, having fun with the cowherd boys and dancing with the gopis, and all these are happening by his arrangements. So as he performs his lila, others can be purified. You know, so, and suddenly here we are sitting in the temple room in Naperville, and, you know, Krishna's in our hearts too. And he's calling us by our sitting here, hearing his pastimes and seeing these beautiful illustrations of his pastimes. He's calling us. And now we can say yes, no, or maybe. Or, you know, we'll, you know, a little later. I still have some enjoying to do before I, you know, get serious. Or whatever it is. We have our free will. We can respond. But Krishna's calling us. And specifically, you know, according to whatever these deficiencies are, or shortcomings, or demoniac tendencies, he's inviting us to get rid of them and take shelter of me. I have the power, I can do it, see? Like, you know, Prema Trungini's question. So it's reciprocation with living entities all the way through, including what happens before.
Each demon, according to our acharya, each demon is representing a particular anatta. It looks like they're all pretending to be nothing, exactly what you say. But there's some kind of a, they're appearing to be something.
Well, Nama Kohara and Mani Griva weren't pretending, they just got that situation. But, so it's not always one thing, it's, there's diversity. But deceitfulness is real big in the life of a demon, sure. They pretend to be something. Yeah. You have something else, Prema Trangani?
I remember reading that Avarshuna, he didn't say she's Saisha, but actually, I don't know which of the other four, but I think the same form was something, and I have various comments on it. So it looks like Saisha, especially because it looks like Saisha that the effulgence came out and merged into the body of Krishna, but actually he didn't get Saisha from.
I don't recall reading that. For your edification, the commentaries of our acharyas are both ecstatic and exhaustive, and it takes a long time to go through them. it's taken me hours every day to prepare these. So I haven't read I just read some of the commentary because I didn't have time. So I don't have the answer to that. What our acharyas say about what you just said. Didn't read it. When we get there, I didn't get that far. I got, how they were enjoying together in the forest. But I'll read it when we get back. Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada Ki Jai.